The Friday Report. Getting to the heart of Ireland issues. Isle of Wight Radio.
So, Friday Report then, we have to talk about the budget again. I know we've mentioned this a few times on the programme, but I don't think you can overemphasise the challenge facing the Isle of Wight Council at the moment. There was a public meeting at the start of this week. Head to the website, iwradio.co.uk, if you want to find out a little bit more about what was said. And if you're on Twitter, actually, scroll back through our tweets, because you'll find a few details on Twitter as well about what went on at that meeting. Two people in the studio now were at the meeting, Councillor Phil Jordan and also Councillor Jeff Lumley. Now, following that meeting, Jeff, you have released an alternative budget, which you do every year. But this time round, you're saying, look, we can do this differently. Tell me a bit about your budget.
Okay, well, hello, everybody, and hello, Lucy. Yes, you're absolutely right. Every year for 11 years now, I produce an alternative budget roundabout now to try and put pressure on whoever's running the council. And in the first few years, they never used to pay a blind bit of notice to what I said. But in recent years, I increasingly seem to have quite an influence on the Isle of Wight Independent Group that runs the council. We're in an absolutely dreadful situation. I don't need to keep spelling that out. It is grim. It is very bad, and I'm sure Phil will emphasise that. We've having to find £7 million more savings than we anticipated at this time last year. We're going to have to use some of the reserves that we have, and they're getting very low indeed. And we and all members were presented with a list of discretionary services over £7 million. I've gone through there with my colleagues in the Labour Party. There's things in there that we think we can't possibly lose just yet. We probably will in a year's time, I have to be frank, Lucy. But there are things like the Adelaide Club, like the Goldings, like support for the youth offer, which Ray is involved in the Trend Cafe in Newport High Street. Things like that. We can't see them go just yet. So our budget alternative is to say, is to remove those from the possible savings. It still means there are £3 million worth of savings in the list that they can deliver, and there'll be jobs lost. And I don't want to do any of this, to be frank, Lucy. You know what my position is, you know, on public services. But we've identified the things that we think are vital services that need to be protected. It'll still need using £4.5 million of reserves. We've published that. I met with the leader of the council before I published it as a courtesy to let know precisely what it was. I think it was received fairly favourably, and I'm hopeful that I think it's next Wednesday when the administration published their budget proposals that lots of the Labour elements will be in there. It won't be a mirror image, I'm sure. I mean, they wouldn't dare do that. It would make me look as if I was running the council, which I can't possibly have people thinking. But I think you'll find there'll be a lot of influence. But I have to stress, and then I'll let the others come in, Lucy. I have to stress, this is a one-year sticking plaster. Next year, I really don't know how we can get through unless some sort of miracle happens. And I think I said in my press release in the week, you know, we're bust unless something happens.
Yes, this is, I mean, that's obviously the headline that we ran on. The council will be bust in a year unless something drastic happens. And I mean, surely that's over-egging the barrel. How can a council go bust?
Well, we don't know, really. I think the council is seeking clarification from Westminster as to what the situation would be. But, you know, I mean, we'll get that presumably at some point. I'm hoping that all the lobbying that's going on, the pressure, Andrew Turner seems to have woken up to the fact that he voted for cuts in local government, is actually going to have a profound effect on the Isle of Wight. And I'd just like to say one thing. I mean, there's an important meeting next week organised by Unite the Isle of Wight for people to come and talk about the potential cuts, both this year and next year. And I hope as many people as possible will get along to that, so as we can talk about how we can put more pressure on central government to recognise that the Isle of Wight is different.
OK, so Phil Jordan then, bust within a year, says Jeff. Is he over-dramatising the situation, and should we be taking more money out of the reserves in order to save this, you know, this list of services I've got in front of me that Jeff says he can save?
Mm. Well, Lucy, hello, thanks for having us here. Jeff's not over-egging it at all. In fact, the situation we're in is a dire situation, and it's been a struggle, and I pay testament to Jeff's work, because each year, as he said, he puts a rational alternative. I like to think that he's worked with us, actually, over the past 6 months and more. In fact, a lot longer since we came in, Jeff. Thank you, Jeff. And he's worked with us, and I know that when he delivers some alternative decisions and alternative options, they're always sensible and they're always open to us to see how we can adapt them and bring them into our own policy and our own budget. And I'm sure that most of the things that Jeff has suggested, because we've looked through them, are things that we can do. And but let me just talk to you about the reserves. Jeff mentioned it. You know, we're down to our uppers on reserves.
How much is left in the reserves?
Well, there's a lot of misinterpretation of this, but overall there's a figure of about 43 million. But apart from just over 9 million, nearly 10 million of that is all accounted for. And I won't go into the detail of that, and I think Jeff understands and accepts that.
Although, just give us an idea, because this was one of the questions at the meeting on Monday.
Sure.
Was it, you know, that is an awful lot of money to have said is accounted for.
Yeah, it is. Well, for example, 18 million of that by 31st of March will be PFI money that's been given to us from the government and held on account. That goes into the reserves. But it's accounted for because it has to be paid out in the year 18-19 and 19-20 in a capital payment. And there are other sums like that. I don't think anyone doubts this and disputes this now. There's about 10 million, just under 10 million of reserves that we can use. And as Jeff said, the suggestion is this year that we use around 4 million of it. 4 million, if Jeff's saying 4.5, then perhaps some of the his ideas are coming from the extra 500,000. I'm sure we can look at that. But that leaves us down to the wire. And as Jeff also says, this time next year, we won't have that 4 million. And can I just also explain what using reserves does? It pushes the problem back a year because the 4 million is capital. We haven't addressed 4 million of revenue savings. So this time next year, when we put the 4 million of capital in, we're going to have to find 4 million extra next year.
The chief executive at the meeting on Monday was asked, well, hang on a sec, why do you need to save so much money in the reserves in the first place? So, you know, 5 million is a lot of money to have sat in the bank when we're looking at cuts like this. Why do you need to save that 5 million? As he was saying 5 million was the point which, you know, the council couldn't fall below because it had been advised not to do so. Why keep 5 million?
Well, it sounds a lot of money to average people, to working people. It's a lot of money. But when you're running a multi-million pound authority like the Isle of Wight Council, 5 million can be spent in no time at all. There is a subjectivity about it, and Jeff and I could discuss that, but you can't take it down to zero.
So more could go.
Well, I don't know. We'd have to look at exactly what the risks are. Our chief executive, our senior officers are informing us that is about the limit. But there is some subjectivity in this, I accept.
I mean, at the risk of sort of dumbing it down here slightly, you hear, you know, someone with millions in the bank can live off the interest of that millions as well. What happens to the interest of that, you know, 50-odd million that you've got in the reserves?
Well, here's an interesting thing, Lucy. We've come to discover that we're paying £11 million a year in interest payments. We're a microcosm of the government here. So the interest payments on money that's been borrowed, but it wasn't borrowed last year. This is borrowed 10, 20, 30 years ago, and we're still paying it back at £11 million a year. That's all. Well, that £11 million would see our revenue shortfall this year, wouldn't it, Jeff?
And of course, Lucy, that any interest we get on reserves is used as part of the revenue account, so it will be used to prop up services. So it's all taken into account. But, I mean, I would take a little bit of difference with the advice that Phil's getting from officers. They say, never below 5 million. What happens if the sky falls in? Well, I would say the sky's falling in, you know, and, you know, I think I could probably live with a couple of million, to be frank. And I think if it's the difference between keeping services for vulnerable people and having an extra £2 million in the bank, I know what my choice would be. I don't know everybody will agree with me, but...
Well, Jeff, we wouldn't disagree with that. But in the the context of that capital is only putting off next year. That's my only reserve on that.
Isn't it giving false hope, though, Jeff? You know, it's brilliant to be able to say, look, you know, we're going to keep the Goldings and Adelaide Club. We're going to keep the Cross Solent patient travel, all of this list that you've got here. I mean, it's just giving people false hope. Nothing much is going to change in the next year, surely. David Cameron's not suddenly going to change his mind over these cuts.
Well, false hopes, I think I called it a sticking plaster. I recognise that. But a year of services is better than your services ending, you know, on April the 1st, in my view. It gives us time as a local authority, as a community, with our MP, hopefully, representing the island at Westminster instead of representing Westminster on the island, you know, all working together to put pressure on central government that the island is different, with particular challenges and costs, a low wage economy in a high income region of the UK. You know, all these things need to be taken into account. I think for too long, during recent years, we haven't had the best deal from government. Frankly, we didn't have it under a Labour government, probably because there was no Labour MP here. I've always said, you know, you should do well when the MP's a member of the governing party. But with Mr Turner, it doesn't seem to happen.
Ray, you're looking at this from the outside in. What's your take on the whole situation?
I mean, the point that the Isle of Wight is the poorest county in the southeast. We have major problems here with unemployment. We have a high number of elderly people, particularly poor elderly people. And, you know, the island is a special case. You know, if you look at places like Surrey and Hampshire, you have much more diversity of population. You have people who are very wealthy, who live in big houses, who pay lots of council tax. You've got places in Surrey like Epsom and Ewell that pay more money in council tax than places in the north of England pay in all their tax. So, and all that goes in, not all of it, but goes into Surrey's coffers. Where you look to the Isle of Wight, we have very few people in that middling group. We have some very, very wealthy people who often aren't here very often. They just sort of live here part-time. And so we're poor people trying to help poor people. And from a charitable point of view, from the voluntary sector point of view, we're constantly having to pick up the tabs of failed government policy of all politicians, because we still have poverty, and some poverty is caused by people just not knowing where to go. They have the wrong information, but a lot of it is due to the fact that their services and support are being cut. And it is that question of just how much do we cut this, and is it fair? And the Isle of Wight, yeah, being a small county and struggling, there has to be a way forward. And councils can go bust, and the government can step in and take over a local authority. Just whether that would help or not, because we're still going to have the underlying problems. And we have certainly seen at the Footprint Trust a massive increase in people contacting us who are in fuel poverty, who are very concerned about how they're going to pay their bills. They're sat there in the cold, again, often worrying unnecessarily because they believe energy bills are going to be bigger than they actually are. But they've got into the whole mindset of, oh, I'm going to have all my benefits cut. I'm going to be forced to leave the home I've lived in for years. And I think it's something to do with the speed in which change is happening. And, you know, sometimes we have to slow down a bit just to give people the chance to make some small changes. So, you know, I completely agree with the theory that you shouldn't have someone living in a great big house, one person. Obviously, that is illogical. It costs a fortune. They can't look after their garden. But to force them out at short notice is not a good way. It's something that you should encourage people to do.
Should we be thinking of ourselves as poor people trying to help poor people? Should we be thinking of ourselves as entrepreneurial people? You know, we need to think differently. We need to get ourselves out of this. We're a bit too reliant on you know, authorities giving us stuff. Maybe we need to start thinking about how we're going to get ourselves out of the problem.
Well, I think, you know, the whole idea of resilience and giving people skills and helping them, you know, just how to manage their energy bills. bills, and to switch, for instance, could save them a couple of hundred quid a year. And there is a bit of that where people do need to care for their neighbours. But I think we're very good at that on the island. I'm thinking back a few years ago when we had the snow, people went and dug their neighbours out, people knocked on doors they didn't even know, they just know there was an elderly person living there, they went and helped them. We're very good at that. Very few people, we hear terrible stories from the mainland in big cities and towns where someone died a year ago and nobody knew. On the island that doesn't happen because we are a bit nosy. We like to know what's going on in our roads. There's not much that passes past my front window that I don't notice. But we are good at that. So I don't think the island could do an awful lot more to actually be more resilient. But we are now, certainly in the voluntary sector, the advice organisations like the CAB and Age UK and ourselves, we do all work together. We actually share information. We pass on the stuff. So we are more efficient in the way the voluntary sector works. And there's probably a bit more that could be done there. But of course, these things take time. And what's happening with these cuts is they're happening quickly. And so we haven't got the time to put these safety measures and to build up that resilience. And I think that's what worries some of us. It's not that all of us are opposed to every cut or to living within our means. There's probably many things that we can see where Mr Cameron's trying to come from. But it is the speed in which it's happening and that is causing suffering.
Lots of nodding. Phil, are we going to see Jeff's policies appear in your budget?
Well, we may well do. We are not a million miles from Jeff's aspirations and ideas at all. But can I just come back to, it's interesting, Ray, you talk about Surrey and Hampshire. Of course, Surrey have just asked government for £20 million because I think they describe it as an unsustainable budget. You can read what you wish into the word unsustainable in that context. And this year, Hampshire, for next year, are putting over £40 million of their reserves into its revenue reserves into their budget. So even these wealthy counties are feeling the pinch. This is how desperate it's getting.
I mean, I think that the problem is, though, and it happens in day-to-day life, if you've got it, you'll spend it. You know, we're not very good at saving, are we? Anyone is, whether it's a council or whether it's me going out to the shops. If I've got that cash, I'm probably going to spend it on something or find something to spend
true,
it on.
Well, that's true, Lucy.
I mean, I criticised the ex-leader of the council, David Pugh, for using reserves when we had money.
Do you know what? That was my next question.
You need to save money whilst the sun's shining.
It's cyclical. And I remember being in the meeting.
He'll probably ring up and challenge me now and deny it, but I seem to remember it. But can I just say one thing that relates to something Ray suggested? The biggest thing that I want to keep going in this is the Supporting People programme. People don't always understand that has a major knock-on effect to voluntary organisations such as the Law Society, for instance, and a lot of the organisations involved in I'll Help. And if you cut that money away, further down the line, you'll find people needing even more spent on them through adult social care services. So it's a false economy. It's preventative work. You cut that out, any of it now, and it's, I mean, we cut out 500,000 last year, I think, you know, which, and I was thinking maybe we could do another 500,000 this year, but I was persuaded against it. We need to keep that going, because if we save 2 million here, you know, save 2 million there, you bet your bottom dollar in a couple of years' time it'll be 5 million more on our expenditure
you're right,
side.
Jeff, it won't be a saving, that will be a false economy, and I'm really pleased to hear you talk that way about the Supporting People. That was really something that we were quite determined to try and hold on to. But look, you know, this is so bad that we're getting to the line on this, and using a sticking plaster in Jeff's terminology this year, we will set a budget of some description this year. This time next year, the way it stands, unless something changes, we will not probably be able to set a legal and lawful budget. And by something changing means more money coming in. And you have to realise whether we like it or not, our money comes from government. Most of our money from the Revenue Support Grant anyway. And that already we know is reducing to zero by 2020 to be replaced by business rates, the 50% extra on business rates. And we already know that will pull us £33 million worse off than we are right now with the Revenue Support Grant. So every which way we turn here, we're looking at a brick wall of financial failure.
All right. Well, if you're listening to this and you're worried, and perhaps you want to ask some questions about how it's going to affect you, then give us a call. 822002 is the number, or you can text IW a space in your message. Send it into 81222. We are due to find out next week what the government's provisional settlement for the Isle of Wight Council will be. And after that, the Isle of Wight Council knows a bit more about how much money it's got to spend. So watch this space. We'll come back to that, I have no doubt, on the Friday report. And actually, on the 5th of February, I believe, yes, the 5th of February, it is going to be a big budget discussion here on the Friday report. So I'll let you know more about that in the next couple of weeks. Right, onwards and upwards then. Fire started the week, literally the first story of the week. A huge, devastating fire in Cowes, the likes of which I don't think we've really seen on the island. And certainly in the sense of the drama of the pictures and so on, which I have no doubt you'll have seen by now. Phil Jordan, you're the executive member in charge of this particular part of policy, and you've been down to the site. Where are we at with the fire?
Well, Lucy, firstly, let's thank our fire service and our firefighters for responding in the way they did. As always, there was another large fire at a school in Lake last year, but it's a big fire for sure. And our firefighters responded magnificently, as they always do. It's a testament also to our partnership working that we managed to get pumps and crew over from Hampshire as a precaution. Not necessarily, although they attended the fire, not necessarily to attend the fire, but to give us capability elsewhere on the island. What we wouldn't have wanted to have seen is road traffic accidents and fires starting elsewhere with no capacity. So that was a precautionary measure, and that worked very well. But you can see that the devastation there. I've walked around the site, and the heat of the fire that's been explained to me, a very difficult task to deal with. And our firefighters turn up and walk into these areas with potential life-threatening risks. So I think we need to be very thankful that our fire service exists in the way it does and our firefighters that are committed to this. What's for the future? Well, the site, I don't know whether it's open, actually. I haven't been down
no,
in a couple of days.
No, not until next week,
no,
we're told.
But when I walk around, I can see why, because there's lots of loose metal, sheets of metal that are dangerously hanging, ready to be caught in the wind and blow off into property and people if they were on the site. So behind the scenes, we're working to try and find property that we have as an authority that we could turn over to the businesses that have been affected badly. And I suppose I would just say that it again demonstrates the need for people to have a fire risk assessment for themselves, to be trained in fire appliances that they need to have on site. And just one other thing, business continuity. It's quite clear that some businesses that are not even affected by the fire on that site can't get into their premises and carry on trading. And I think businesses need to just be aware that business continuity insurance, perhaps, or some plan anyway, is a very good idea.
All right. And there's a statement out today which confirms a little bit about what we've been hearing earlier in the week, that the fire occurred during vehicle repairs and a car repair workshop on the site, spread quickly to adjoining buildings due to the involvement of flammable liquids. The actions of the workshop staff in raising the alarm, says this statement from Isle of Wight Council, and trying to contain and extinguish the fire are to be commended. And a reiteration there of what you were saying about making sure your business is ready for the worst should it happen. Before I take a quick break, let's take this. It's a tweet from at Diamond Hell. How would being part of a devolved authority change finances? How likely would we be to have to cross the Solent to access services?
Yeah, the devolution, and nothing's settled on this, but the devolution process is to allow 100% of business rates instead of 50% now. Across the devolved region of the 16 authorities, we would have to get a business rate equalisation agreement. That is to say that when the agreement came into place for a devolved authority or a devolved region, that no authority could be anywhere worse off than they would be with the revenue support grant levels that they now receive. So that's an in-principle place that we need to get to, so we wouldn't be any worse off. My understanding is about £200 million extra across the region if you equalise across all 16 authorities that could be spread out across the authorities. But you know, this is not a golden pot at the end of the rainbow, devolution, in terms of financial settlement for the island.
All right, thank you very much indeed, Jeff.
Offer a comment, Lucy. I'm sceptical, to be frank. You know, I mean, Phil says there's potentially an extra £200 million coming in. I'm sceptical that all the local authorities within Hampshire will be happy to see money coming down to the Isle of Wight, which has probably been raised in their area, you know, rich business tax areas such as Basingstoke, for instance. I'm very sceptical. I'm also very sceptical about how it would all be governanced. You know, the island's very proud of its independence. You know, we've had our own local authority for well over 100 years. And I don't know if I want to be a councillor who votes to pass that on. I don't know how many of us would do that, to be honest. There may be benefits, but I still remain to be convinced, firstly, that all those authorities will agree to it, and secondly, that the Isle of Wight Council, when it comes down to it, will vote for it. Mm.
All right, and Ray, do you want to jump in on the devolution argument?
Yeah, well, I think what we always have to look at in any reorganisation of government. I was brought up in London, where we had lots of reorganisation of government, and no sooner than you'd got used to one, there was one very good one, the GLC, that did a brilliant job when it was in, and didn't necessarily agree with everything the GLC did or Ken said, but in the main, what the GLC did, both under Conservative and Labour, was very good. But when it was set up, there was massive opposition from the Labour Party. They didn't want it. Then they loved it because they got a lot of power from the GLC. But for me as a Londoner, it was one of the best things ever because we had coordinated transport throughout London and we had housing as well throughout London, which was controlled by the GLC originally. And I think what we should always do is be very open-minded about any reorganisation of government, because most people now access services by phone or by internet. They don't pop into a council office. That is very rare. So as long as the person you're talking to on the phone knows about the issue, and we use national helplines for all kinds of things, and gone are the days when a plumber on the island only covered Ventnor. I would like to think a proper plumber covers the whole of the island and other businesses too. So I'm quite open-minded about this, having lived in other parts of the country where I've seen reorganisation of government. The most important thing is, as Jeff has alluded to, is it must be a good deal. We mustn't finish up being worse off and having less democracy, but it could be that expertise from these other local authorities and partnerships with them could actually help the island. And we've had a traditional link on the Isle of Wight with Dorset and Hampshire, and again, that could actually help us. So I think we have to look at what's on the table. At the moment, we don't know 100%, but it could benefit the island. And if people want better services, then maybe this is a way forward. But there's a lot of questions that have really got to be asked.
Just to clarify there, Lucy, Dorset are not part of the devolution.
I'm saying traditionally the island had quite close links with Dorset. We've got the same words. I'm like, Shine. I think it's only in Dorset and the Isle of Wight to come across that name.
All right, on that note, we need to take a break, because I do want to come back and talk about the oil discovery, the Dallas of the South Coast. We will do that next.
The Friday Report with Lucy Morgan on Isle of Wight Radio. This is The Friday Report.
Welcome back to the Friday Report. Now, I wore my jacket with shoulder pads today, especially for this next item. We are thinking Dallas on the show. Oil discovery at Arrotton. This is a previous site that British Gas has drilled. And it was thought at the time that nothing had been found. And now UKOG, UK Oil and Gas Investments PLC, has gone back and used its new high-tech equipment and found oil. We're told it's a modest amount of oil. I'm putting the inverted commas around that, because I'm not really sure what a modest amount is. And they tell us that any drilling there after some tests and environmental impact surveys and the right permissions and so on would be very low impact and very moderate. Your thoughts on oil discovery at Arrotton? Ray, do you want to start?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I've got my hat here, Dallas hat, yeah. I mean, we've heard this before, of course, haven't we? There's been quite a few of these stories over the years. I mean, it is true to say that there are very strict environmental regulations in Britain. People have to be very careful of confusing Britain with America, which has far more lax regulations. So if there were to be any drilling for oil or any other minerals, then that is strictly controlled and there are massive fines that can be levied on companies. The issue really is that if you look at most families on the Isle of Wight, they have a car. And that car runs off petrol or diesel, as do the tractors run off diesel and all the lorries. Where does that oil come from? Do we import it from other countries or do we produce our own oil? And in the shorter term, oil is still a big part of our economy and is also a very big part of our transport network. And therefore, as oil becomes, at the moment, of course, oil prices have fallen, but that was probably a temporary blip down. It will soon go back up again. As soon as there's another war or rumour of war, that usually does it. And so you can sort of see that the UK does need to get at oil, and it's very hard to stop it happening. If we say, well, we don't want any oil abstraction on the Isle of Wight, it will just do it somewhere else. And also, all the time you own a car or you travel on a bus or you have a tractor, you need oil. So I always have this slight thing where environmentalists drive to a meeting to campaign against the drilling for oil. This will be a very small blot on the landscape, very, very small indeed. And the environmental impact, there's far worse things. If you really want to worry about environmental impact on the island, just go to Coppins Bridge and smell the air. That is environmental pollution. And that's the actual outcome. But all the time people want fossil fuels, this is unfortunately one of the side effects, but one does have to get it in context. It's a very small application and the environmental impact of it itself is very low, but of course they are getting out fossil fuels and we all know the effects of burning those.
We spoke in the week, I spoke to Stephen Sanderson, who's the chief executive of UK Oil and Gas Investments, and he was at pains to say, you know, we've got a site that's similar in Horndean in Sussex and people even in the village there don't know it's there. And he also wanted to make the point that it's not fracking. Now, there's a public meeting this weekend of anti-fracking campaigners on the Isle of Wight. Ray, do you see a difference between the two?
Yes, there is, because this is a proven technology. We've been extracting oil all over the world for many, many years now. And so there are, you know, we know what we're doing. And I would also say that with fracking in Britain, again, we mustn't confuse fracking in America with what would happen here. In America, they've got very lax environmental controls. They've even suspended some to allow fracking. If it is allowed in Britain, there will be very strict regulation laid down by the Environment Agency. And again, very heavy fines if anything were to go amiss. So again, people do have to be very careful that they look into this, they read up on it. New Scientist has a very good article online that you don't have to subscribe to read, and it tries to give a more balanced view. I think, again, we have a bigger issue here, which is something like 80-90% of homes in Britain heat by gas, by mains gas. And we import about half that gas from all over the world. Now, we're not just suddenly overnight all going to stop using mains gas and go over to electric, even if we did. A third of our electric comes from mains gas. So we do need gas, and we have a choice of importing it from all over the world or producing it ourselves. But the issue is we as individuals make choices of the kind of energy that we use. And it's very easy to be against using gas and say, well, what are we going to use instead? And this is always the argument. People don't want wind power, but they also don't want nuclear. They don't want fracking. Well, if you want the Western style of living that we've all got used to, and you don't want to go and live in a teepee and eat insects and berries and use a bucket for certain facilities, you're going to need to have fossil fuels in the immediate future. In the longer term, we can.
I think we'll leave it right there before we go too much further with that description. Phil and Jeff, I mean, is there maybe a financial opportunity for the Isle of Wight here? Stephen Sanderson was talking about a potential profit share, which the North has seen in similar ways. And this is the oil industry moving onto the Isle of Wight, and everyone knows they drive huge cars and are very, very rich. So will the Isle of Wight see some of this?
Well, I don't know, but it's lucky we've done the road up into Arrowton, isn't it, so they can get their big shiny cars in and out more swiftly. But I don't know. But, you know, elsewhere, we're investing and looking at into alternative power. So we quite like the idea of economic receipts from generating power. I don't, I have no idea what the details are on this oil planning. I haven't even put a planning application in yet, as far as I know.
No, not yet.
No. So, and if Ray's correct in it being a small field, I suspect then by the time we've come to an arrangement with the company for some profit sharing, it's not going to eat much away of our $10 million budget deficit.
Right. There is a proposal on the island on the renewable side to actually have a community-owned company here to produce energy from a solar farm, and the profits from that will be used to help fight fuel poverty. And that, I think, is only right that any money, or at least some of the money made from generating energy of all sorts, goes towards helping those who are struggling with their fuel bills.
And so,
you know, we have to see opportunities, and I know people are often scared of change and don't want anything to happen. But again, what I always say to people, you know, do some proper research. You know, if you've got access to the internet, go on university websites, look on New Scientist, read up. Don't just read alarmist leaflets, because a lot of the stuff that's in there is actually inaccurate and a bit scary. And I think we just need to sometimes take a step back and say, in the long term, yes, we don't want coal anymore. Gas is a lot cleaner than coal. And ultimately, we will have, I personally hope, more nuclear power stations and more gas-fired power stations and biomass and wind. But that could be 20 years away. We need to do something in the meantime for our energy.
We've got just a couple of minutes left. Let me take a couple of comments here. Andrew on Twitter says, 219 million barrels is massive, not modest. Just to clarify, that they're saying that although it's 219 million barrels, only 10.2 of that is recoverable, which apparently is described as modest in oil terms. If only an island off the south coast of England had enough sun and wind to make harnessing them worthwhile, says at Whinge White on Twitter today. I suspect with maybe a little bit of irony there. I mean, in terms of the community energy scheme, am I right in thinking that's Asda Capital going that's into correct. That? Is yeah, that in the bag? Is that definitely going
to
happen?
Yes, so the prospectus is about to be launched. People can actually buy shares in this and they will get a return. The Isle of Wight Council, for its investment, will actually be making money out of this as well. Yeah. It's a very, very good deal. And I'm very much in favour of renewables. As I personally have said, I'm in favour of nuclear as well, as are many leading environmentalists now. But we do have to point out there are times of the day when there isn't wind and there isn't sun, and you actually need to have 20% baseload electricity all the time to run refrigeration units, the NHS, the railways. So you do need something like nuclear or biomass or gas or coal to do that 20%. And that's the debate that we have to have in the future. We've had a lot of procrastination on energy, and we haven't invested in our infrastructure in energy. We're actually in danger this year, if you have a very cold winter, of having power outages in the UK. And this was predicted 5-6 years ago, and no one did anything to prepare us for that. So that's
although we are we're still awaiting that cold winter that was predicted by the newspapers a couple of months ago. I'll keep waiting for that. Keep opening the windows. Today's
not today.
You know, people probably think, "God, Jeff Lumley's been quiet." I am a member of the planning committee, so I do have to be very careful because an application. But I think there's, you know, that Ray has always been very knowledgeable about environmental issues, for, you know, in the years I've known him. And I would imagine there are some people out there thinking, what on earth is he talking about? I think that would be a good programme for you, Lucy, really, because, you know, Ray is knowledgeable, but there will be people out there who think, why is he saying that? I mean, you know, there is a very strong anti-fracking campaign on the island. You've mentioned, I think, they've got a public meeting coming up. You know, there will be major objections to anything happening in Arrowton, as there always have been. That's why I'm having to be careful about what I say. But, you know, Ray is a knowledgeable person. He speaks very eloquently about these issues. And frankly, and I will just say one thing, people can't have their cake and eat it when it comes to energy. You know, we need to have a broad range of different alternative energy sources. Renewables are part of that. And like Ray, I'm not anti-nuclear. The French wrestled with that some years ago and have dealt with their energy needs for the foreseeable future. I'm not saying we should go entirely nuclear, but I think it can be part of an energy delivery system for the UK.
Gentlemen, I'm going to have to leave it there. We've run out of time on that warm and cuddly note about Ray there. I think we'll leave it. Thank you very much indeed for joining me on the show today. Councillors Phil Jordan and Jeff Lumley and Ray Harrington-Vale from the Footprint Trust, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much, Lucy.
On the show next week, then, we will be speaking to Cowes Carnival Committee, one of the organisations affected by that terrible fire in Cowes, to find out exactly what happens now for them. And also, the air ambulance will be on the show, talking about what their 2016 is going to bring. Thank you very much if you texted today or tweeted or got in touch with the show. It's been the Friday Report. Heather McCallum's here next.